Coming up next on This Week in Radio Tech, Mark Persons. You know Mark Persons. He's been on the show before and written a lot of articles. Mark Persons has actually been awarded a Lifetime Achievement Award from the SBE. He's one of only 10 people to ever receive that award. Plus, a lot more coming up about learning and doing and the seven audio wonders of the world. All next on TWRT. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Angry Audio. Audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. By Nautel, keeping you connected with your community with support and webinars, online at nautel.com/webinars. And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts. Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to the light bulb at the top. Oh, my light's off. Look at the... What? Wait a minute. I didn't plan that. Really, I didn't. Hang on. I think I can turn it on remotely.
You have to file a NOTAM, please. File a NOTAM.
Yeah, I should. Okay, let's see if it'll come on. Yes, there it is. Okay.
Oh, thank goodness.
Got the app on the phone to turn the lights on and off. Do you have that for your tower site, the app to turn the lights on and off? All right. Hey, I'm coming
Thankfully,
to you from...
I don't have to worry about that.
Yeah. I'm coming to you from the Telos Alliance studio in Nashville, Tennessee. This is actually at my home office where I do all kinds of good work for the folks of the Telos Alliance. Thanks a lot, Telos, for providing a lot of the gear that sits around here in the studio and a lot of the experimental gear I get to play with. And I work out solutions and try to help figure out, hey, how can broadcast engineers put this gear to work? So that's where I am today in beautiful Nashville, Tennessee. And okay, let's take it over to Chris Tobin. Chris, welcome in to This Week in Radio Tech. How are you? Drinking again.
Yes, I have a drinking problem. It's coffee and I'm up. I'm doing well. Things are good. It's a great day here in the city. I'm enjoying it. So it's fun.
We've had a lot of good weather across the nation. That's about to change as Hurricane Delta makes its way in. But I guess, and you know, it's going to come over, what's left of it will come over the Nashville area early next week. But you two guys haven't had hurricanes in a while. And when I say you two, I'm referring also to our guest, Mark Persons. Mark, welcome into the show. How are you?
Thank you. Always great to be here.
Well, good. Good to see you. And the lower third that we will put you on full screen again, that lower third across your screen gives us a clue as to what prompted me to give you a call and say, hey, Mark, why don't you come on the show? Tell us about the SBE Lifetime Achievement Award. What is that?
Well, it was a total surprise to me. You know that the Society of Broadcast Engineers has 114 chapters worldwide, 5,000 people. 5,000 engineers, and I wound up with this award, never asked for it, never dreamed I'd get it, and it's only been presented, I'm only the 10th recipient in 56 years. So every 5.6 years on average, they've given this award away, and it's the John Battison Award. I knew the guy. He was a terrific guy, just wonderful. Do you know he was a He lived in Britain. He was a Spitfire pilot in World War II and lived through it. Can you imagine that? Now, there's a guy who accomplished a lot of things, but I'm guessing that they gave me the award because, as I said during the ceremony, I never had a plan B. It was always, always, always going to be a broadcast engineer. I started at age 5 when my father started in the 1920s, and he started at age 17. Now, remember that number, because I'm going to give you that again.
Hey, Mark, I'm going to interrupt you for just a second. We got a lot of story to tell, and we're going to get to it, but you've really wet my whistle to hear some things about your dad, and I do know a few things because you gave me a book about him, and to hear some of the things that you did. What we're going to find out from Mark as the show moves on is what I was curious about. Mark has documented, you know, some of his own history in electronics through the military and in broadcasting, and I think almost all of us have certainly read articles or heard papers given by Mark Persons. And I was very curious to understand
from his early days, even as a child growing up in a radio home, through his military training and him also being I think Mark was a teacher a bit, we'll find out, and then moving into broadcast engineering. What were some of the events in his life that informed his career that he, you know, was able to, hey, I learned this, you know, well, back when I fell off a tower, you know, but whenever it was, or just what things in his past informed his present and future and his career. We're going to get to that with Mark Persons in a few minutes. Also, that interview with John Krivet coming up. I want to tell you, Chris Tobin, as usual, Nautel is continuing their Transmission Talk Tuesday roundtables. This is where you get to participate. If you don't want to participate, no problem. Just listen the whole time. It's very entertaining and informative. But if you've got a story to tell, just raise your hand and Jeff Welton will put you on this coming Tuesday. Now, this is Tuesday, October 13th. Now, that's next week, so I wouldn't wait till next week to remember it. Go ahead and register for it now. Go to nautel.com/webinars, Tuesday, October 13th at noon Eastern time. So it'd be 11 o'clock in the morning for me and, 9 o'clock in the morning on the West Coast. One of the primary complaints about HD radio technology has been the cost. Well, this session will discuss HD implementation from the technical side, talk about some recent developments and things you can do to minimize the cost and maximize the performance. And Jeff Welton will be joined by some guests, Donna and Jeff Detweiler of Xperi Corporation. They'll talk about the burning question, should you even bother with this or not? In some cases, maybe not. You might be surprised at what they have to say. So check it out with Jeff Welton, Jeff Detweiler, and Donna Detweiler coming up. That is this coming Tuesday at noon Eastern time. Go to nautel.com/webinars and register. While you're on that page at nautel.com/webinars, go to the Tech Talk Tuesday. Just go ahead and register for the webinars for the rest of the month. You'll get reminders a day before and an hour before that there's a webinar coming up or around. I keep calling it webinar. These are really the roundtable discussions from their Tech Talk Tuesday. Different than a webinar, it's a roundtable. If you want to participate, you absolutely can. nautel.com/webinars and click on Tech Talk Tuesday. All right. Got that out of the way and got you informed of it and reminded. And I've been to most of these. I certainly signed up for all of them. And so you should be too. All right. We're talking to Mark Persons. Chris Tobin is along. And Mark, let's, we've got pictures to share, but I'll let you kind of call when you want to see a given picture. I think you've got a list of them in front of you. And, I'm curious as to, you know, your early days, but I'm also curious moving through that, you know, what are the things that informed your long and illustrious career?
Oh, illustrious, you say?
Illustrious, oh yes.
Okay. It was really a family thing. It was really in my genes when my father started, and I just grew up in that environment. Now, he was a corporate engineer at the time, but by age 7, he had left the corporate thing after 7 stations, which started in the 1920s, back before you had groups of stations. That was back when we had individual stations, but they were pretty progressive, and they did shortwave and FM before 1950 and all of that kind of thing. But we wound up, he decided he wanted to have his own radio station, a little station we built, WELY in Ely, Minnesota, 250 watts on 1450 kilohertz with rather poor conductivity, soil conductivity, that is, but that was radio. And I was 7 at the time. And I remember going up to the transmitter, watching the meters and turning the knobs. I mean, it was just something that I needed to do because I always was going to be a radio broadcast engineer. So,
hey, I got a question, Mark. I remember reading in your dad's book something about the way that I think he had experience with this. The way that he got a record on the air was to play it on a maybe a Victrola style turntable and put it in front of the microphone or put the microphone in front of it. Is that right?
That's right. But you have to remember that was the 1920s. That was before you had electronic pickups for phonographs. Okay, wow. So it was all mechanical. See, it was the needle on the record and then a horn. So that was before we had amplification. The horn did what it could.
Now, and would that have been at WELY?
No. No.
Oh, that, that, but before
that was EOY. That was 1954. This was back WEBC Duluth back in the mid 1920s.
Okay. Okay. All right. Sorry to interrupt, but I wanted to clear that up in my mind when where that came from, sticking a mic in front of the Victrola.
Okay. And then we moved on from Ely, and then I got to build a new radio station in Brainerd, Minnesota, KVBR. Now, I was 17 at the time, and I got time off from school, which I didn't like anyway, so that I could go and wire this place. The equipment had been set in place, but gosh, who knew how to connect a wire from point A to point B? I knew how to do that. I was already a ham. Why not? It was a wonderful experience. It was great. And it worked.
Then we moved on from Ely. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Then we moved on from
Mark, go ahead. I'm sorry. I turned something up that I shouldn't have.
Okay. So guess what the latest technology was in 1964? Cartridge tape machines with tube amplifiers in them.
Yeah.
Now, that began a lot of maintenance for years and years. You can imagine, sure, the cart machines got better, but gosh, they required maintenance all the time, reel-to-reel machines as well. That really kept me busy for a long time. But when I turned 19 after being in college for a year, which I absolutely hated because nobody there knew anything about electronics, and I wanted to do electronics. So I joined the military because it really, in my mind, was a young man's obligation, and it was really required. It was either that or I'd be drafted because it was at that time during the Vietnam conflict. So I taught radar and electronic repair, always working with my hands in the equipment. And then, of course, the orders came, go to Vietnam. Now, that was devastating to me, but I went. I didn't go to Canada. I did what I had to do. When I got out of the Army, then I came back and to be a civilian. I remember the Army wanted to keep me. We like you. Stay. No, thank you. I'm going back to do what I had always planned to do, be a broadcast engineer. And that's what I did.
Hey, I wonder if we could look at some of these early pictures. You provided some pictures in order here. Of course, picture number one actually we used as a promotional for this episode. That's you. Yeah. What are you receiving some good news right there or what?
That was the SBE award, and there I was in the office. And like any SBE conference, I dressed for the occasion, and the tie shows vacuum tubes, thanks to Shane and Andrea Tovin. But that was me that day, and that was just a few weeks ago, and I'm still on cloud nine because of it.
So the next picture says from August 1941. What are we looking at here at WEBC?
Well, yeah, get this. This is the county fair in Superior, Wisconsin, and look at how they went to all that trouble to build studios for a county fair back then. Radio was big back then, and money was hardly any object. That's just how they did things.
Wow. And so they had a live studio audience. Who's the announcer there?
I have no idea.
Okay. But that's WEBC in Duluth. Wow. 1941.
And on the wall, I can't see it because of an image on image here, but there are listings of some of the other stations on the network at that time.
Well, I can read WMFG, W9XYH, and WHLB, the Arrowhead Network.
Okay. The W9XYH was actually a shortwave repeater of WEBC.
Wow. Let's look at the next picture, also from 1941. What is this?
A local band group showing up, and that's back when beer advertising was a big thing on radio. And the man on the left, you see him? He's wearing one of those tin can hats that they used at World War I soldiers used. And this was just before World War II, August. It was December 7th when we got into World War II.
Wow. So when this picture was taken, there had not been a World War II yet.
Almost, at least not, but not quite.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Almost, but not quite. Wow. That's amazing. And
I think that's Western Union clock in the background, too.
I love this, the little stand-up advertisement. Fitger treats the crowd free beer. The radio station gave away free beer. That's amazing. Oh, my God.
Boy, those were the days. And this is where my genes came from. This is what made me even before I was born in 1947.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, 47, I think the next picture coming up is from 51. So we're going to fast forward 10 years to after the war. And we've got somebody climbing a tower. What is this picture all about?
That's my father. He's up on a tower on top of the garage in Duluth. There were no television stations in Duluth. He put together these four, dipoles with reflectors to see TV out of Minneapolis, which was 150 miles away. I mean, we were literally the first people in Duluth that had a television set.
And you would have been about how old at this time?
51. I would have been like 4 years old.
Okay. So you don't have too much memories of this, but you sure got some pictures. Wow.
I do remember people coming into the house. This is back before anyone locked the doors, and people would just wander in through the door, stare at the TV, probably a 6-inch screen on it, and then wander out afterward. You never knew who they were.
Now, your dad got into what, the cable TV business or community antenna business, right?
He did that for a while, right? But in the middle, we also had radio stations.
Right.
So
right.
Radio has always been in my blood.
Right. We got one more picture before we go to the break. This is from, 1967 you labeled it. What is this?
That's me.
Okay.
Like I say, I've never really been afraid of heights, so it was always doing something. And I think those two lower antennas below me are actually made with a 2x2 wood. And mm-hmm. I built those antennas as high gain channel 11 antennas, I think, just to prove that I could do it. And gosh, they work too.
A lot of directors there, and what one reflection in the back, and I guess the active element is the second to the last on the left end.
Yep,
it looks like with there's a balun
with the 300-75 ohm balun. That's right.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. So I noticed that you're wearing a belt here. You're actually tied off to the phone pole. In the previous picture, your dad didn't look like he was tied to anything.
He was just holding on. There's no problem. I've never had a problem with height, so there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Hey, it's This Week in Radio Tech. Mark Persons is our guest. He's the recipient of the SBE's Lifetime Achievement Award. He's only the 10th person in 56 years to get that award. And I'm sure there are stories that exist from the back room of the boardroom where I got to be in the voting process there. So I don't think I can say what happened back there. Was there a food fight? Did it come to blows over who was going to get that award? I can't say. Can neither confirm nor deny. Hey, Chris Tobin is with us. Chris has been sitting back, I'm sure, just listening in. Chris, it's I don't know if you've gotten to hear Mark Persons' dad's story about radio.
Yes,
and how, you know, okay, good. That's it's just amazing to be in the family and how Mark then, you know, of course, moved into electronics. We're going to hear more about that in just a few minutes. And Mark's military service is coming up. I think that I'm sure it had a big influence on what was going on. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you every week by our friends at Angry Audio. And I just got to visit the Angry Audio factory today, early this morning. I stopped by there and rousted them all up and said, hey, come talk to me. Actually, I was nearby for some other business, so I thought I'd stop by. And I was reminded about this. We've shown it a few times before, the headphone gizmo. This is a headphone amp that's really easy to install. Why? Well, because you can power it either with this right here, the 16 volts AC comes with a wall wart to go in there, or you can power over let's say not power over Ethernet cable. This is not an audio over IP device. It's analog in, out, analog through, but it's the Studio Hub standard. So you can easily wire it up to play the audio that you're bringing to it, and it'll also loop the audio through just like that. And also, if you inject the power here, it'll power more devices down the line. In the front, it's got the quarter-inch tip ring sleeve connector for your headphones and the eighth-inch size as well, and that amplifier control right there, the volume knob. What I like about this, look at this. Chris, you and me, you know, we'd never snag our pantyhose on this. It's a nice, smooth design. You mount this up under the cabinet. Yes. And you won't hit your knee on that. That's nice. But if you don't want to put it under the cabinet, you can also put it on top of the counter as well. Yeah, the writing will be upside down right there. But it comes with four little rubber feet on it, so it won't slide around. Or you can screw it down. Also, if you do mount it this way, the four rubber feet help keep it nice and quiet and won't rattle in case a screw comes loose. It just stays up there nice and tight. The other thing, though, I want to show you and remind you about is the Bluetooth audio gadget. The Bluetooth audio gadget. People are giving incredibly good feedback over this box. This will take audio from your phone to and from your phone. It's got a couple different modes of operation. You can play audio from your phone, high quality audio. It automatically sets up the high quality mode in the Bluetooth codecs to play out the outputs and into your audio console. And by the way, it'll do left and right, loose stereo if you want to. Also, it'll act in a different mode if you want to place a two-way phone call. It'll automatically connect to the codec, the Bluetooth codec, with two-way audio. The audio quality, it's not 20 kilohertz there. It's more voice quality, but it sounds better than a POTS line. So if you've got a high-quality audio coming in and out, say, from a Skype call or FaceTime or a Facebook Messenger call, you can do any of those things, or a WhatsApp call. You can tie your phone into your audio console. You don't need a POTS hybrid. You can use your cell phone to connect to your console using the Bluetooth audio gadget. It's easy to pair. It's got a pairing button right there on the front. You flip it over and put it in the pairing mode, pair it right up with your phone, and you can pair it up with multiple phones. And so that way, different disc jockeys, different announcers can come in the station and all be hooked up to the Bluetooth audio gadget. Perfect solution for working from home, because you may have plenty of audio. You may do an interview on your phone. You may just want to bring in the mayor, some guests, a newsmaker of some kind on your phone. And you can certainly do it with your phone. And you don't have to use a telephone call. You can use any audio app where you're talking back and forth to somebody, like, for example, FaceTime or a Messenger call, any of those things. It could even be a Zoom meeting. You could put that onto your audio console. Hey, you could tie into This Week in Radio Tech and put that on your console too, you know? Wow. So lots of ideas there. Check it out at angryaudio.com. Angryaudio.com right there. This is the Bluetooth gadget that I showed you today, along with the headphone amp. And of course, they have all the Studio Hub adapters and cables at angryaudio.com. All the original stuff, it's there. So check it out. All right. You're watching or listening to This Week in Radio Tech, episode 513. I'm Kirk Harnack, along with Chris Tobin, and Mark Persons is our guest. Mark is the recipient of this award, the Lifetime Achievement Award from the Society of Broadcast Engineers. Mark, if I haven't said it, and I'll speak for Chris, congratulations. That's quite an award and quite an honor that your peers would think so highly of you.
Thank you very much. I never considered getting it, but it in retrospect, it all makes sense. But then also, there are a lot of other worthy people out there too. But this one, like I said, never had a plan B, so it just happened because of that direct one direction. I'm going this way, and I'm not stopping. So that's just how it came out.
Well, part of your preparation for being a contract engineer and building radio stations in parts of the U.S. and especially in Minnesota was your experience in the U.S. military. So let's have a look at picture number six and tell me what in the world is going on here. I'm not familiar with this aircraft.
It's a very high-tech surveillance aircraft, two men inside, two 1,400-horse turboprop engines, and the large rectangular boom on the bottom is a side-looking airborne radar. It could see into the jungles of Vietnam and see movement in the jungles. It actually worked. And my job was to keep the electronics working, the the radios working on this aircraft. Now, not all of them made it back either. The next photo may show you the example of a lot of them got shot up because they were flying low. And here's one that dumped in the bay just before it made it back to the airport. The pilot survived and the observer did not. So things happen in wartime situations.
Wow. Well, we've got one more picture from wartime, and that's from the avionics shop in 1969.
Yep. What's this? Yeah, this is the Collins tuner for HF, and it was not uncommon to see bullet holes in the equipment, and then you wonder, gosh, it ain't working today. Wonder what's wrong with it. Well, here you go.
I wondered what you were pointing at. That's a bullet hole. It went through the corner of the cabin, huh?
That's right. That's right. And a lot of our equipment was made by Collins. It was just terrific, engineered just great. And but then again, little things like this happen. So there you go. That's back when I had brown hair, by the way, too.
Hey, let's talk about Collins and maybe as it might apply to other military contractors. I was just a young child during the Vietnam conflict, but I've certainly gotten my hands on equipment that was either military surplus or built by a company that had been a military contractor. Collins, I guess parts of it then became Continental, but it sure looks like, you know, their military experience building equipment to specification and writing manuals that were extraordinarily thorough, a little hard to read, but extraordinarily thorough. It seems like that well informed their broadcast business. And you can see that lineage in it. Obviously, that was part of your life, too, seeing military equipment and then seeing the civilian, perhaps, version or descendant of it, right?
And absolutely. But it also tainted me to look at manufacturers that didn't do this kind of thing very well. And I look at them and go, geez, couldn't they do better than that? But anyway, I guess I've always expected the best. And so that's I can see that. Collins had a wonderful reputation going back to the 1930s. Art Collins was building commercial gear and amateur gear and that kind of thing. And the tradition just continued on through with almost bulletproof equipment. Thank you.
Where was Collins Radio headquartered? Was that in Iowa?
Oh, Iowa. Or Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Yeah. Yeah,
I remember visiting the factory back when I was a teenager.
You're not necessarily the person to answer the question, but how did Collins become part? It was Collins and Collins Rockwell, and then did part of that become Continental?
Well, Art Collins got into building computers at a time when he shouldn't have done that. That's the take that I get, and it wasn't the 8086 architecture, which is what we use today for 99% of the computers. It was his own, and it got the company into financial trouble. So it was broken up into pieces.
Yeah, yeah. Well, certainly I've worked on some Collins rigs, Collins FM rigs, and some Collins AM rigs too. Thinking about some of the lineage of older AM transmitters, perhaps with the Collins name, perhaps with the Gates name on them, whatever you like. What are some of the aspects of the transmitters, the AM transmitters that you got started with, that you particularly remember either fondly or remember not so fondly? And I'm thinking of 833 tubes or 440 tubes, maybe 4-500 tubes. What design did you think that was a great transmitter? And maybe there's a design you'd point out as that was not such a great transmitter.
Well, the transmitter for KVBR was a Gates BC1G, which was a wonderful transmitter, actually. But, you know, it was the low-price competitor to Collins, because Collins was always the Cadillac of the line. And I remember working on many Collins 20V2s, 20V3s, and some 5-kilowatt stuff. And they did just marvelous designs, beautiful designs. It cost more money, but it was worth every penny because they were so nicely done. I'm thinking of the low pass filter and a 5-kilowatt, the 8 something or other, and it was an engineer's dream whereas mm-hmm. the others were, they worked, but they were El Cheapos.
Hmm. One of the things that you seem to be very well informed about, and I'm really amazed at people, because to me, this is there's a lot of magic involved. I know it can be worked out on a slide rule, on a calculator, on a computer. And that has to do with AM directional stations, and also your work with AM, diplexing, triplexing, quadplexing, different transmitters in the same tower. But talk to us just for a minute about your experience in designing AM directional systems. I understand that you were not exactly a big customer of Kentronic because did these things yourself.
I bought a lot of parts from Kentronics. Absolutely parts. Fabulous yeah. people. Yeah, that's great. Actually, for the design work, I left that for people smarter than me. But for me, why buy a phaser when you can build it? And so I'd order truckloads of the parts, put them all together exactly the way I wanted them. And maybe someday we should talk about a building where there's an aluminum wall in it with the components on one side and the operator with the knobs on the other side. We can do that. I don't know that I have any good photos from that. Maybe I should go get them. That was the first five-tower directional I built was in Hibbing, Minnesota. And that's exactly how it was built. And by the way, on 650, Nashville's frequency, and in order to protect them, it had to be five towers. And we're talking about the low frequency, 650 AM, piece of land, 3/4 mile long and 1/4 mile wide. That's what it took to build this array. But there I was, just happy as a clam, building all of these networks and making them work. And I went on to do it two more of those for the same client. He just kept hiring me, all of them 10 kilowatt arrays, one in California, one in Florida. And by the way, the detailed information is going to appear in a Radio World article, which I understand will be coming out in one of the next few issues of Radio World.
One thing I'd like to touch on before we go to our next break, and with the idea of building directional phaser cabinets, look, I get the part where you can take the schematic from maybe a consultant, right? A consultant came up with a schematic with some parts values, and the whole layout, what needs to be adjustable, what can be fixed. I get that. But you also have to do the part where you translate what's on the schematic, not only into parts with values and strap between them, whatever's appropriate for the power level and the frequency, but you've also got to make this stuff work mechanically. You've got to have the right holes in the right places or shelves, you know, all the different ways that these heavy parts get mounted. And remember, the adjustable coils, they're going to get cranked on. And so you've got to have the right knobs and maybe a vernier dial on there. Talk to me a little bit about what informed you as to how to get that done so it would work well and last almost forever.
Well, one of the things that I've always done, even before I was a contractor, was go visit all the other stations. And I looked at and examined everything they had, talked to the old engineers, many of them who didn't bathe regularly. And I would ask all these questions until they practically pushed me out the door. The point is, I went to learn everything I could, and then I used that knowledge in putting all this together. But you can make a lot of mistakes. But for instance, if you've got a coil here, and you're not going to put another coil here looking at it, you'll put it at 90 degrees so that they're not looking at each other. You get the idea. So I avoided all those mistakes because I knew already the right things to do.
Ah, okay. Okay. That's one of the ways that I tend to learn too, is I look at other people's stuff and think, okay, well, that's the way to do it. What about their design may be haphazard and what was done for a very, very good reason? And sounds like you did a lot of the same thing too, looked at other people's designs. Coming up in a few minutes, we're going to be looking at some of the shop, the technical facilities that Mark has put together, also Mark's flying of the space shuttle simulator, space shuttle and landing it and more coming up. It's This Week in Radio Tech with Chris Tobin in New York City standing by, and also Mark Persons is our guest. And coming up in, hey, just a few minutes, John Krivet will be joining us for a few minutes to talk about this really cool opportunity for us as audio engineers. Our show is brought to you in part by Broadcasters General Store and this thing right here, the Henry Superlight. Imagine how fast Mark Persons could have built the hundreds of studios he built if he just had one of these. This is the Henry Superlight. Now, you remember the Henry Super Relay. Of course, it's still available. We all have used I have certainly used a bunch of Henry Super Relays. This, though, is built for more modern times when we're not necessarily controlling 120-volt light over the door that takes a lot of power. This is for running LED-based lighting fixtures, including the lights that may be on your mic arm or above the door, or a ring of LED lights around the furniture just underneath where it looks really cool and gives a splash of light. This is the Henry Superlight. And what's cool about it is that you can wire to the contacts right here on these Phoenix connectors, and they work really, really well. You can control it if you need. It will itself power an LED up to, I think, half an amp, 500 milliamps. You can also supply with external power and it'll sync up to an amp. But what's cool is the control mechanism, these two RJ45 jacks. It makes it easy to wire. You've got several studios or you need to wire this off to some other place that's got a GPO on a console somewhere. Use Cat5 cable. Cat5 cable, and then inside there are jumpers to set for, hey, I want this one to activate when Studio 1 comes on, and I want that one to activate when Studio 2 comes on, and the next one when Studio 3 comes on. So you can just use one Cat5 cable, daisy chain from unit to unit to unit, whether they're in the same rack, or whether they're actually down the hall from each other. It becomes just a really nice wiring situation with the Henry Superlight. And like all Henry engineering stuff, I mean, Hank Landsberg just builds stuff to where you it just makes sense. He includes the schematic diagram with his manual. There's the short manual right there, tell you how to hook it up and make it work and tell you the benefits of it. The Henry Superlight LED Tally Light Controller. And it still has Form C contacts on it, so you can, if you have to mute speakers, maybe you've got a console that doesn't do that for you. If you have to mute speakers, you can certainly do that. There's the webpage for it. Lots of information right there. And it's just part of a huge line of equipment that really helps you do your job at radio station. There's an example right now, if you're watching on video, the multi-studio loop-through Cat5 control for several different studios. Check that out with my friends at Broadcasters General Store. I was just talking to Dave Kirsten and Buck Waters a few days ago. Really friendly, nice people, and all the folks are there, whether you talk to Carly or Jonathan or Jessica or even Dave Kirsten. Call them up at 352-622-7700. That's 352-622-7700 on the web at bgs.cc. Thanks a lot for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right, Mark Persons, our guest. Mark, we've got a few remaining minutes. I do want to tell you, we got John Krivet coming up, and Mark will be here at the very end of the show with some words of wisdom and a tip of the week. So hang on for that. Mark, we better move on to the last three pictures that we have, don't you think?
I think so. I will tell you that I never operated my business out of a garage. It was all, this was my first business location. Actually, it was in a basement, but I've always believed in workbenches and getting things done. And that's exactly how I did it.
I like your lighting setup, because the basement was built with those terrible little porcelain fixtures, and they would cast shadows on what you were working on. So what did Mark do? You put in a bunch of fluorescent lights right over the work.
And power outlets on the bench on the front where you could get them real easily.
Yeah. Yeah. Good deal. That's a good looking workshop. All right. What's the next pick?
Well, it was my 40th birthday, and Paula, bless her soul, gave me she bought me going to space camp in Huntsville, and it was absolutely fabulous at age 40. And it was terrific. And I learned to fly the space shuttle from simulators that at the time they had just retired from astronaut service with newer ones. But this was quite an experience. It was great.
Wow. That does look like, I've been to that place in Huntsville. I didn't get to fly the simulator though. That's very cool. Good for you. Good for you. And what's the last picture we have here?
Okay. Well, this was the last picture of my shop. And the remaining two homes after the basement shop actually had floor level shop. And in fact, our homes were built with one level for business, one level above for living. And that's what the shop looked like and still looks like a lot with most of that equipment. Well, all that equipment, actually, which I still use for my hobbies and to help out. I still mentor four broadcast engineers. I'm on the National Radio Systems Committee and on and on and on. But at age 70, it was time to say stop. Paula had worked courageously in our business since shortly after we were married. She was the other half of the business, and it really showed because it all worked so well. It gave me a chance to do what I wanted to do while she handled the finances.
Very nice. That's a beautiful, beautiful shop, and you're working on a good exciter there, that BE exciter. Was that an FX50? Is that what that was?
That was a 50. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Chris Tobin, I've never had a shop that big or that nice. I've got a shop right now, but it's nothing like that. In New York City, Chris, can you have a shop at home? I mean, is there room for that in a big city?
Well, it depends on the size of apartment you have. Some places you can. But no, I've been fortunate to have a couple of places I worked at where we had a shop. One company I worked with when we built our new studios, the director of engineering said, you know what? I think the engineering shop needs to be large enough to be put stuff on a bench at least 10 to 15 feet wide. We designed a shop that was about the size of a one-bedroom apartment. It worked well. Yeah. It was the best-looking studio room in the facility. Boy, I tell you, just like Mark pointed out, I was able to lay out all my equipment, work on stuff, spread it open, have two projects at once, and not be on elbow to elbow. It was perfect. There's something to be said for that.
So, Mark, again, more accolades to you. I see right here that in the latest SBE Signal, I think this came in my mailbox today. There's a blurb about you and this prestigious award, one of now only 10 people. Also, Radio World did an article about you. We're going to link that in the show notes so people can read about that. I was looking for it right now. I've got it somewhere here. Oh, there it is. Yeah. So we'll link that. Mark Persons receives SBE Lifetime Achievement Award. That'll be in the show notes. And
that's actually the news story, but there'll be a follow-up story with more personal stuff in it. Okay. In Radio World.
Yeah. So that is what hasn't come out yet. And that'll be coming up. I'm sure both their online version and in print too. Yeah.
That's how they do it. And I'm proud to be a writer there, too. They're good people.
Yeah. Yeah. Paul McLean does a super, super job there. All right. Now, Mark, you're going to hang on because we have a tip of the week coming up from you in just a few minutes. But this is a treat. I got to attend the first one of these 7 audio wonders of the world today. And by attend, I mean I got to watch it online. But it's a private feed. And the AES is part of their virtual show, the AES 2020 show. They are presenting at no charge, but you do have to register for this. We'll put in the show notes, we'll put the links for you to register. The next one of these, I believe, is coming up, I want to say next, it's going to be October 15th, so a week from today. They're going to be going through Galaxy Studios that's in Belgium. Galaxy Studios in Belgium will get a virtual tour of that. I was absolutely fascinated today with Skywalker Sound. And so right now I want you to hear from John Krivet, past president of the AES. And he's going to tell you about this virtual studio tour of the 7 audio wonders of the world. Hang on, because we'll be right back with tips and tricks and some good information about signing up for these. We'll be right back. Hang on. Hey, friends, it's Kirk Harnack, and I'm online with John Krivet, former president of the Audio Engineering Society, the AES. Hi, John. Welcome in.
Hi, Kirk. How are you? Great to see you.
I am good, and I was asked to make a presentation during AES, as usual. David Bialik in the broadcast and online delivery track asked me to do that. But there's something, okay, great. I'll give details about that later on. But you're here to tell us about this really exciting virtual tour thing of Seven audio wonders. Have I got that kind of right?
Well, you know, normally when you go to an AES convention, what happens is a bus will pull up to the Jacob Javits Center in New York, and it will take, you know, it will pick up 30 people and take them to someplace like the broadcast facility for the Food Network or some famous recording studio or broadcast facility. Because we are virtual this year, we are not locked into any one place. So I had this idea. Let's go visit the seven audio wonders of the world. The seven audio wonders of the world are amazing recording studios that all tell an story. Tomorrow, we are starting out with our first one, which is Skywalker Sound, where all the Star Wars music is recorded and post-produced. We're going to take a virtual walking tour with Leslie Ann Jones. And right afterwards, we're going to have a little Q&A, a live Q&A, where people who are involved in this tour can ask all kinds of great questions. Any of you ever been inside Skywalker Sound? Pretty amazing. The following week, we're going to Galaxy Sound, where Oro 3D was invented, and all kinds of amazing things happened or are happening in that facility. Really incredible. Probably the most compelling place in all of Europe.
I'm glad you said that, because I was going to ask, where is Galaxy Sound? I've not been there or actually heard of it. So tell me.
In Belgium.
Belgium.
It's
okay.
Fantastic place. It is well known in that community. And not only is it a pretty incredible place for music and sound for picture, but it's also a place where they brew their own beer.
That's well, of course they do.
Pretty delicious Flemish beer. The following week, we're going to Village Recording Studio in Los Angeles. You're going to find out that that was the place where Tom Petty met the Heartbreakers. And it's a really, really interesting thing. I think we're going to have some very compelling people for the live Q&A. If you've never been to the Village, it is probably the most show busy place I've ever seen for a recording studio. So that is the third one that happens on the 22nd of October. On Tuesday, the
27th on is what I'm showing.
The 27th is going to be Blackbird, right where you are.
That's in Nashville. Yeah. That's
right. You're right at one of the seven audio wonders of the world. And we're going to be walking through. I think that there are going to be some special guests who are in the studio, because that's a place where a lot of fantastic people hang out. But we're going to take a virtual walking tour with Mark Rubel, who's everybody's favorite friendly audio guy.
He's awesome. He goes to our local AES chapter here in Nashville, or section here in Nashville. And what a friendly and informative. It's going to be a great tour.
Often known as the kindest man in audio.
No doubt.
We are that Thursday, the 29th at 11 a.m. Eastern time. I want you to come with me to Abbey Road Studio.
Oh, my.
Anybody ever been in Abbey Road? We have Brian Kehoe, who wrote the book Recording the Beatles. Brian knows everything about the microphone locker, about the rooms, about the equipment, about the old things, the new things. I'm really looking forward to it. He's still editing it. He's putting in all kinds of historical photos and new things. And I think it's going to be absolutely terrific. Later that evening, United Studios in Hollywood, a really compelling place with a history of Bill Putnam. Frank Sinatra had an office there. The drummer never gets wet, because they have something called a drumbrella, which goes up and down, changing the sounds of the drums.
Wow.
So a really compelling thing. I was there last summer, and or the summer before last, and I'm not even legally allowed to tell you some of the big stars that were walking in and out of that. But pretty incredible. And our final one, Friday the 30th, is going to be Capitol Studios, also edited together by Brian Kehoe, who does a lot of work there. I'm told that you might run into Al Schmidt, our fellow member of the Audio Engineering Society. And that is a really incredible place as well. So to take a virtual walking tour of some of these facilities, each one tells a really incredible story about who they are, about the people that work there, about the great history that they have, but not just the history, where they're going. You know, these are all very vibrant working studios that are all doing very well and really flourishing even during COVID times and difficult times with home studios. These studios really set the standard for what our industry is. And I'm enormously grateful to the folks who have allowed us to take this tour. So I would just ask you all to sign up for the Audio Engineering Society convention so you can participate, so that you can be a part of it, so that you can tell your grandchildren that you walk through Abbey Road or Capitol or Blackbird or the Village or United or Skywalker or Galaxy. And I think people will have a good time. It's kind of like a Willy Wonka tour for audio people.
That's a great analogy. So the first one, Skywalker Sound, actually, as of the time of airing or the first airing of This Week in Radio Tech, that already happened earlier today at noon. The next one, though, is a week from today, this airing date at noon at Galaxy Studios. And from there, they go on Thursday. Then there's a couple on a Tuesday. And then the last three are right in the bunched up in the last 2 days of October. John, do you know if you miss one of these, do you know if it'll be available online for playback later?
I am told that it will be.
Okay. Okay. And
so I would just suggest, if you want to keep up, it's the Audio Engineering Society convention is a great place. You know, that's how I know you and I met at the top of the Empire State Building.
That's right.
Lighting it in celebration of the 50th anniversary of the FM antenna and the 2015 AES convention. And so there are, you know, this is a great way of meeting colleagues, of finding work, of finding out what the new technology is, where companies are going, where new people are working. And so I would, I'll look back at pictures from 10, 15 years ago, and I'll look at pictures of my students, and the ones that were at the AES convention are the ones that have the best careers, have made the most imprint in the industry, and understand really what goes on. And so those are the people that are doing great jobs and have great careers. So I would invite you to join us. Kirk, you're going to be there. I'm going to be there and be a part of the Audio Engineering Society convention and of the 7 audio wonders of the world. Come on the walking tour with me.
So the usual AES website is aes.org, but to sign up for the show and look at all that's going on, it's aesshow.com. aesshow.com. We got to run. John, thank you for this overview. I can't wait, and I hope by the time this is airing, I will have seen the Skywalker Sound, although, to be honest with you, I've been there. I've been there.
Oh,
yeah.
You're a pretty lucky guy.
It's a great drive through the Redwood Forest to get. It's really awesome.
My God. Well, let's hope it doesn't burn down anytime because that wouldn't be good.
Oh, that would.
Really incredible place. And thanks so much for having me. Come visit me in Boston sometime.
I would love to. Thanks for the invitation. After all this COVID stuff is over. And, you know, one of my colleagues is right there in Boston, too, Jeff Stedman. So we'll get together.
Wonderful.
Thanks so much.
Take care.
Bye-bye, John Krivet, former president of the Audio Engineering Society. I'm Kirk Harnack. That was great talking to John. And so you can go to aesshow.com, aesshow.com. And you have to work your way through there. We'll put some links on the show notes, but you want to sign up for that studio tour. There are six of them left. There's no cost if you work your way on through it. And so that's pretty good. All right. Our show, This Week in Radio Tech, is brought to you in part by my friends at Max Connect Wireless. This is a LTE 4G modem. And yeah, this is just an ordinary cradle point. This is just an ordinary PEP wave, Max Connect, PEP wave 4G LTE modem. But what's different is that these have a SIM card in them that connects you to the Max Connect wireless service. And what that means is using AT&T, using Verizon, T-Mobile, Sprint, you get higher priority than everybody else except first responders. Your data gets through. If you got a tower that's jammed up with lots of users, it's not a problem. You get your own channel. You get your own data path working through there. And so broadcasters all over the U.S. and in Canada, too, now are using the service of Max Connect. You're putting these at transmitter sites where you maybe can't get internet. Now you've got remote control. Now you've even got emergency streaming to your transmitter site to get audio out there. If your STL fails, your T1, whatever your method is out there, put one of these out there. And hook it up to a codec at the transmitter site, and you can get audio out there too. I've even run the micro MPX algorithm over these at about 400 kilobits per second. Now you can run a lot of data pretty fast with one of those, but if you need to get on the air, you can do it. You can do what I did and make that happen too. So you can also use these for regular, you know, left right stereo codecs from any of the companies like Telos, Tyline, Comrex, and so forth. But just get to your remote control. That works great. You can also take it out to sites where you may not have known good internet. So you're doing a live remote broadcast from a car dealer, from a grand opening, from a ball game. Well, Max Connect Wireless is your ticket to success. Check it out, maxconnectwireless.com. We'll have a link in the show notes. And I'll tell you, the stuff actually works. It really, 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 really does. All right. Hey, it's our last quick little segment here of tips and tricks. Mark Persons is with us. Chris Tobin is with us as well. And let's see. I've actually got a tip. And so because I'm an old man and I forget things, I'm gonna give mine first before I forget all about it. So if you are dealing with an audio over IP network, and maybe you're dealing with AES-67, sometimes some equipment needs to have an SDP file. That's a session description protocol, SDP file. Now, most of the equipment out there that generates an AES-67 stream, you click a little button or a link next to it, and it will give you the SDP file. You can download it or copy-paste it. But just in case your equipment doesn't, and you need a properly formed, and that's kind of a critical thing, a properly formed SDP file to describe the AES-67 stream that you're trying to connect to somewhere else, there is a facility to do that for free online. It is at the Telos Alliance support website. So you go to support.telosalliance.com. support.telosalliance.com, and I should have given this over to Suncast before I got started, and just type in the help box generating SDP files, or just type in SDP files, SDP as in session description protocol, and voila, there's a form there. It tells you how to use it. You put in a source IP address and a channel number, and bam, you get the SDP file properly formed. And we even tell you, hey, if you need to change something about the form of the file, we tell you what to change and how to change it. So it's, and then you just copy paste it over to the equipment that you want to receive an AES-67 stream on. And I'm thinking, for example, a Genelec speaker. You can have a Genelec speaker pick up AES-67. It needs an SDP file to be put in there, and it doesn't do it automatically. So you copy paste this into its interface, and bam, you're picking up the desired stream. That's my tip of the week. I'll have a link to that in the show notes. We're going to leave Mark for last, the honored position for last. Chris Tobin, have you got a tip of the week for us this week?
Well, tip of the week, just since we're talking about, working on things and fiddling around and tinkering, as Mark has done very well and made a career out of it. I just recently received my VNA, the Vector Network Analyzer Portable, for under $200. It's been recommended by several people in the business. So I said, what the heck? Let me give it a try. So It comes in a very nice box. When you get it, you're surprised. You say, wow, this is interesting. It has a quote on the box, too. It says, to invent, you need a good imagination and a pile of junk. Thomas Alva Edison. Okay, so those of you who tinker like I know darn well what he means by that. But I have this because I've been doing a lot of RF work lately, and my 60-pound box is just not something I want to haul up to a rooftop and then try to work on a tower nearby. So this has come in handy. It's not as down in the noise floor as like a HP or Agilent or the others out there, but it gets you close. So you get in, you can use it for a lot of stuff. And Doug Lung, I believe, Doug was talking about using it for several HDTV things, ATSC 3 and 1.0. So if he's using it and enjoying it, I'm guessing it's going to be fun for me too. So today was tinkering tips, the usual stuff, as you point out, trying to remember things, document, document, document. I'm just going to keep saying it all the time because it's important.
Chris, if you'll send me a link to where you purchased that that VNA, I'll be glad to put that in the show notes.
Sure, absolutely.
And actually, I ran across a YouTube video recently, just in the last day or two, comparing an expensive VNA, a Voltage Network Analyzer, to a Vector Network Analyzer, to these cheap ones, and telling you, you know, what they're good for, what you can do, and maybe what you can't do with the inexpensive ones. But it was a good little video. I'll put that in the show notes as well. VNA, Vector Network Analyzer. I'll bet you Mark Persons knows a thing or two about those. But Mark, what can you leave us with in terms of some wisdom, a tip of the week?
Well, I should say that most engineers know about the tech tip section on my website, mwpersons.com, mwpersons.com, tech tips. And I like to tell stories about engineering problems I had, and gosh, this is the solution I found. But here's my real tech tip for the day, is ever since the beginning of time, I've carried a ratty piece of paper like this in my pocket, and my, is it handy, because I'm with someone, they say this, this, and this, I write that down, and if I'm supposed to do a solution to the problem, well, I look at my notes and say, and keep working on them and keep crossing them off until I've got them all taken care of. And it's an ordinary piece of paper that came off a tablet that I have folded up, and you can see how many things I've X'd off the list so far, and so I've had to start a second one. So there we go. The notes that I took from the show today, which I'm going to investigate tonight, tomorrow. Always fun talking with you.
That's a great idea, just to have a little piece of paper. And, you know, I always keep this note with me all the time, right there. Well, you can't hardly. There you go. Little Ohm's Law. Ohm's Law. Never forget Ohm's Law. Don't ever let Tom McGinley talk about you and say, you know, he's a little light in Ohm's Law. Mark, thank you so much. And hey, Mark, I need to find your tech tips place on your website. I'm sure I can, and I will put that in the show notes as well.
Yeah, just look for mwpersons.com. It's one of the links on there. You have to agree to the terms that you're not going to do something bad to me, because an attorney is trying to protect me. But there are the you get in there. There's AM, FM, you name it. All kind. There's close to 100, I think, in there of situations that might fix your problem.
I can imagine a conversation between you and John Bissett going on for a long time.
Oh, sure. Oh, I know John well. We're great friends.
Well, good deal. Well, Mark, I'm very delighted and honored to call you a friend, as well as you too, Chris. I guess we're all three friends here. It's great to get together and talk about these things, hear a little bit about Mark's history and coming up, and then learning some good ideas along the way as well. So, Mark, thank you for being with us. I really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
And Chris Tobin, thank you for coming to us. And I must say, Chris, I'm not sure what's different, but your mic sounds extra good today. Extra good.
I'm outside. There's a nice steady breeze. It's 64 degrees Fahrenheit. Weather conditions are right. Humidity's low. I guess that maybe that's it.
Maybe that's it.
Trouble. I don't know. That's it. Just, I have good broadband. Everything is going well.
Yeah. Coming up next week on the show, Chris, let me take a quick look. There's a good chance that we're going to have an amazing history lesson coming up. I'm still working on the show exactly. And then in 2 weeks, we're actually going to do the show live from the Next Best Thing event here in Nashville, Tennessee. We're going to do that show on Monday, the 19th of October, and we'll replay it at the usual time on Thursday, the 22nd. So, Chris, I'll let you know. Maybe you can join me for that. We're going to be live on location at the Next Best Thing event. It's like a little mini NAB that's traveling around the country, bringing you, you know, the cool technology that they couldn't show it at NAB. So that'll be coming up next couple
weeks. Yeah.
Chris, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate your being out there in the weather. It looks good, though.
Weather? No, I'm fine. I'm good. Well, thanks to Mark, and congratulations again, Mark, on your achievement award.
Indeed, I'll toast a big glass of milk to you.
There you go.
All right, and thanks to Suncast for producing our show, being right there, Johnny, on the spot with all our stuff. Appreciate that. And thanks to Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.